Hi, we're Visible, the wireless company with nothing to hide. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not into you. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
All right, good morning, good afternoon, good night. It's a different time zone everywhere, so I'll just say all the things. Good month, good year, all is good. Welcome back to the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez.
I'm Andrew, and I just wrote all that stuff in the beginning of the script to see if I could mess you up, but you pulled it off.
So I did.
Not as fun as I thought it was
going to be. It was perfect. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about in today's episode. Really, it's just it's January, and it's always quiet in January, and we kind of know it's going to be quiet in the tech world.
Yeah, I think everything we had so many things to cover last week, we probably covered every single piece of news in January.
Yeah, we fully caught up. For sure.
Yeah.
But we did actually catch up. There was some videos in the past week, the Galaxy S21 review. And here's the thing, like that, it's a great phone. It's a solid phone. It's a sort of a default phone. And we all kind of knew it was coming with that. I was nowhere near the first review. This wasn't breaking news. A lot of you have already seen stuff about this phone. But we decided to have a little extra fun with the production itself because, spoiler alert, we're video nerds and we like having fun with video stuff. So we'll talk through some of that fun stuff. And I also have here, sitting here, the Huawei Mate XS. Now, what's funny is a bunch of rumors just started breaking out this week about how the sequel to this phone is finally coming in February. And I'd never actually gotten my hands on the Huawei Mate X or XS in the first place. So we finally have it here. I haven't let you touch it yet. I haven't really even done much
other than
turn it on.
We've only unboxed it, so I figured let's just check it out.
Unboxed it. So what we're going to do later in the show is literally give our actual first impressions and just sort of see how we walk through a device when we first take it out the box. Mm-hmm. So it's sitting here collecting dust for a few minutes while we talk about other stuff. But let's start with S21. It was a fun video. Like I said, it's a review that we kind of all were expecting for a while and knew it was going to be in it. But we had some extra fun with it.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone listening knows pretty much everything there is to of the S21. I still think my favorite debate is wondering if glass versus plastic is... I think it's becoming more and more on the forefront of, like, I think we're going to see more plastic phones, and I'm all for it. You were saying this morning how there's, like, a really good debate on both sides of it, pretty much.
Well, I like to try to see both sides of every debate, and some is harder than others. Sometimes you look at one side and you're like, this makes total sense. And you try to look at the other side and you're like, that's kind of tough. When I look at glass versus plastic in a smartphone, I very clearly see wins for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
You said you're all for plastic. I imagine you've walked through this in your head, right?
I think it's just like, gives me that premium feel, and then it's covered with fingerprints, and then it's more fragile. So it's just like, especially when the phones are getting cheaper, when we see the S21 lineup go down in price, which I don't think plastic back made it go down $200, but I think it helped with that.
It's and one like, of the things.
It feels fantastic and it looks fantastic. So if I were given the S21 at the same price in glass or plastic, I would pick plastic.
So I would not say it feels fantastic, but I would say it's almost indistinguishable from the glass, which is really what matters. So I'll use the S21 line as the example, which is S21 Plus is glass, S21 is plastic. They're coated in the same thing. My feeling is glass wins in look and mostly feel in the hand every time in that one specific category over plastic. Plastic can get really good. Plastic can get kind of close. Plastic can get coated just the right way to look great. But glass wins in feel every time. I don't know if it's just because we like the heavy feel. Sometimes they go with ceramics to give us that heavy feel. And sometimes it's just the texture of it.
Oh, so you're talking, though, like when I first hear you say feel, I think you mean just like what my fingertips feel like on the back of the phone, which
holding,
you are,
yeah.
But also weight and like just making it feel like we were talking earlier about how this phone is lighter, but it's not quite. There was like a V30 or something that just felt so light in the hand. And it's one of those things where at a certain point when you feel something that's so light, it feels cheap. It feels like it's going to break. And I see that worry. I don't think that S21 feels like that, though.
Right. So it's close, but in just that one category, I always give the win to glass. But the other side of that coin is plastic wins at everything else. Plastic is cheaper. Plastic is lighter. Plastic is, you can kind of do more with it. You can texturize it. You can do whatever color you want. We've seen some cool glass finishes, but I mean, fingerprints are a thing. So I always weigh those two things where if like, now here's the last part. A lot of people put a case on their phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you do put a case on your phone, it almost doesn't matter anymore, which means you should go with plastic because it's cheaper. It's lighter. It doesn't break when shatter when you drop it. But I do see both sides of it. I am on the train that if you're making a $1,300, $1,500 phone, you should try to maximize everything. And plastic still doesn't feel like maximizing everything because glass will give you that better feel in the hand.
Mm-hmm.
But for every other phone, for anything that's not your maximum phone, I feel like plastic is fine for me.
Do you think, this is just a thought that came to my mind as you said that, but when you're getting a more expensive phone, and so let's talk 1200 plus, do you think people are more likely or less likely to put a case on that? Because I feel like there's an argument both ways there. I want to protect money, but also I just paid $1,200 for this. I want to experience it in its whole.
I think, unfortunately, it's more cases.
More cases than like an average phone?
I think there's just generally a lot of people putting cases on phones in the first place.
Yeah.
But I do think when you get like a shiny new $1,000 phone, you're more likely to go, I need a case on this ASAP. And I think that ends up in a case faster.
That's a good point. And I saw a tweet recently, or maybe it was a Reddit post somewhere. It might have been on the Dbrand Reddit, but somebody had just bought a new iPhone and they were really excited about it, but they bought their Dbrand case after they ordered it. The iPhone came first, Dbrand case came second, and they broke the phone in the process of waiting for it.
Wow.
So it just brings up this really good point where if you're ever ordering some really nice case that's going to take longer, buy some cheap $5 case to protect your phone if you are that type of person. It's worth it. If you're scared of breaking your phone, always have a case on it.
But I'm always on the other side of the debate because I am the no case person. I, you know, knock wood, this table's wood. I haven't dropped my phone in a long time. And every time I have a case on my phone, it's fine for a while. And then one day I take the case off and I'm like, wow, this is way better. I'm so glad they designed the phone this way. It's nice and smooth. Almost without exception, every phone feels better without a case. Sometimes they're slippery. Sometimes they get fingerprints. I get it, but I don't know. Cases just never get close for me.
I go back and forth with cases. I feel like I'll appreciate it, and then I'll be like, I can't believe I've lasted a year with this. I should really put a case on it. And then I'm like, I love a case. I can just toss my phone over here. I can just toss it over here. I'm at the climbing gym. I can just drop it wherever I want. And then I'm like, then again, I take it off. I'm like, oh my God, it's so thin. It's so nice. It feels so good. And then I'm like, I need to stop dropping this everywhere now, though. Case rant, plastic rant. None of that was what I wrote down to talk about with S21. I think the things people were most excited about in this was some of the camera work and some of the shots we had in it. So a lot of people asking how we did it. I thought, the thing is we've done shots like this before, and I thought we've explained them pretty well, but maybe we haven't.
Well, here's the thing. It's an audio only podcast at the moment, right? So it is pretty hard to explain how we created this video shot versus how the shot looked in just our words. So we can try, and we'll break some stuff down a little bit here in this episode if you're into that. But I do inevitably think when we start making more video stuff about this, we'll
be able to explain better. I think video podcasts could do like monthly breakdowns of like our best shot of the month or something like that.
That could be fun. Yeah.
But I think let's take this one step back and kind of bring up the two shots we're talking about, kind of go to the basics of it to explain it. Because we had a Reddit post trying to explain this floating phone shot in the most insane way possible. And really? I was just like, it was very simple. And it's very simple. And a lot of people at home can do most of these shots pretty easily.
Well, here's the thing about our shots is they're always practical effects. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you ever look at a shot and think, wow, how did they do that? Is that CG? Is that computer generated? Did they, you know, have some sort of extra part of the phone mapped out? So no, it's always practical effects. And what that means is you can achieve the same effect fundamentally if you have the same tools. It just takes a little bit of editing and sometimes a little bit of tweaking to make that final look convincing and sell it. And that's what we did. So the two shots, I'm sure the intro is one of them.
The intro is one of them, but let's take one step back. And there's a shot that Vin got on a pink background with a pink record, and the phone is kind of laying flat but floating above the air.
Oh, the floating phone.
So like in a way, in a basic understanding, those two shots are very similar the way we pulled them off. We just, one is with a still camera and one's with a moving camera. Mm-hmm. So let's go to the floating phone shot first where the camera is still, which is this, anyone at home listening should be able to pull this off like very, very easily. And you can even just pull it off in like Photoshop or something if you want. It's a very quick way to understand it, but paint a picture. Pink background, couple things in the background. There's a phone. Imagine it's laying face down on a table, except there's no table underneath it.
Right.
It's just floating in this atmosphere that Vin created, and it's pretty easy. And we had someone on Reddit saying they thought we had a high-speed camera and was dropping the phone, and we just did it enough times so that at one point the phone was laying perfectly flat and we captured that frame.
Oh my God.
And that was the video.
Okay, part of the talent of this team is when we have a shot idea, coming up with the most effective way to make that shot happen is actually a talent. It's actually a really hard thing to do. When we have this vision of a camera moving a certain way and we start with, what if it should be on the robot? And then we go, actually, we can just keep the camera still and move the phone. A lot of this stuff comes from practice. So no, we didn't use a high-speed camera. I'm surprised they didn't go with fishing wire. That's usually the go-to explainer for floating things.
I think we've almost always found fishing wires harder.
Yes, we've tried
fishing wire a couple times, and it's gotten tough.
Yeah, fishing wire is thin, strong, pretty clear, and for some reason really hard to keep
not
still.
Not stable, yeah. Okay, pretty much all this is imagine a phone. The thing we use to prop the phone up is two old camera batteries.
Have something underneath, not quite the entire phone, but propping the phone up flat above the surface.
In the position you want it, and make sure it is not overlapping the product that you want to show floating at all, because that will make editing far, far harder. And all you need to do then is get one shot of the phone on the batteries propped up and one shot with all of that out of frame and just the background.
Slate is what they call it.
That's what they call a slate. Yeah, there you go. And then it's pretty easy once you're in Final Cut or Premiere or wherever, just layer those on top of each other with the shot of the phone above the shot of the slate, and then just crop up until you essentially get rid of the battery or whatever's holding the phone up. And voila,
pretty textbook.
Floating phone, yeah.
If you've ever seen people, especially on YouTube, who have like a clone of themselves talking, like we've done in our own videos also, it's a one shot on the left, one shot on the right, and a nice convincing gradient somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. So you composite those two shots. That's all it is composite.
Making things practical. Don't overlap.
Yeah.
Like overlapping's the hardest part, which that means planning the shot beforehand or getting ready to sit in editing for a long time to mask that difference out.
It would have taken us so much longer to do that with a high-speed camera.
Oh yeah, I can't imagine.
So okay, the intro shot. That's a little more dynamic, a little more extra work, a little more hard to replicate intentionally. Mm-hmm. This is a fun one.
But it's got the same basic idea behind it, which is if you can replicate the shot, so just think of The floating phone shot was two shots with the exact same framing. If you have a device like a motorized slider or a robot like we do, you can make those moving shots exactly the same in both scenarios. So all this was, I think it was three or four shots.
I think it's a composite three shot.
Three shots. So the first one is like no lighting pretty much. Second one is kind of like twilight lighting, Brandon was calling it. And then the third one was the full lighting and included the phone in it. Mm-hmm. So pretty much all that is the same shot three times with the robot that's doing the exact same movement, exact same framing, and then transitions between them with some sort of dissolve to make it look smooth. And
now all this is sounds really simple when we say it like that, but if we rewind to Brandon pulling his hair out over stabilization.
The theory of it is very simple.
The theory is very simple, which is replicate the same shot three times, fade between the three shots, boom, you've got yourself a fun shot that's hard to replicate. In addition to that, we're using a robot that has its own little quirks and requires additional stabilization, sometimes on a keyframe by keyframe basis to match shots. That's a lot of work. Then we're adding motion graphics that are tracked on top.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a whole nother layer to the process and working currently remotely with our motion graphics specialist,
Michael, who's now on Twitter.
Now on Twitter, by the way.
I will add his Twitter in the show notes. Everyone go follow him.
Shout out to him. But yeah, that now is, that's just us having fun. That's us going, you know what would be cool? If we could have like an outline of the phone, sort of a wireframe, get drawn into the frame in the middle of the move before the actual phone shows up in that wireframe, that would be sick.
Yeah, I'm convinced Brandon on his car ride in basically blacks out and starts developing these ideas and autopilot saves his life. But then he just comes into the studio something, he's like, I have an idea for an intro. And we're all like, okay, good. We need to write. That means you can just go into the robot room and we'll see you in probably I'll see him in 2 hours when I have to control the robot. You probably won't see him for like another 6 hours.
I love the whiteboard sessions that are like that meme of, I don't even know what show it is, but just like ranting in front of a whiteboard about like how this is how it's going to go and it's going to look just like this. That's just us having fun.
Yeah, I think the way to look at it is, in theory, this is very simple. And then once you get that simplicity down and know how to do it, that's when you can start adding flair to it like Brandon does. So like if you wanted a medium between a still shot and what we did with the robot, imagine a motorized slider moving forward at a phone, and in three different shots you change the phone to three different colors of the same phone, and then in a nice smooth tracking forward you just layer those clips on top of each other with a dissolve and the phone changes colors as it moves in.
Looks like magic.
So we're getting to this part now where we're having more advanced moves with the robot, lighting changes, and we're bringing in a graphic or a motion graphics specialist to outline the phone in the same way. So it gets much more complicated, which is where we're at, but that doesn't mean you can't at home try some of these simple things. And I can't wait to see what people do. We've had people replicate our stuff and it looks amazing.
That's some of my favorite videos to watch is people attempting to replicate our like craziest shots.
Mm-hmm.
But as in the weeds as we just got for the past like 15 minutes, however long it's been, I do want to bring it all the way back out to the fact that it's all motivated in some way. And I think that's our biggest challenge, is to give a reason for why a shot happens the way it does.
Mm-hmm.
So for something like the HomePod mini shot, it's not just a fun shot, but it's demonstrating a new feature. And for something like the Galaxy S21, well, it's a cool silhouette. Like, not a lot of phones have a camera bump like that. So we're showing and highlighting it in the opening seconds of the video. So it serves a purpose. So I guess half the fun is all that stuff we do with the camera. And because we're video nerds, we're going to get way in the weeds on that sort of stuff and how to make it. But the practical effect is motivated when you zoom out to a YouTube and a video production sense by something we want to show. So it is a cool opening shot, but it shows you something you haven't seen before. So that's, I guess, the idea.
Cool. I have one more thing about S21 past the shots, but, you had a tweet right before the review came out saying that the let me just find this. Samsung has the most improved and most accurate portrait mode in any smartphone right now.
Oh yeah, a lot of people took that a little bit too simply.
Let's clear this up a little bit, because I feel like it got taken maybe out of context. Also, it's Twitter, you can't say that much, but
I was just paraphrased a little too simply.
Let's go through that. So I think the main debate on there, which it was a really fun debate on in that Twitter thread, Jackson Hayes mentions that his biggest issue with the new portrait mode is that it doesn't have any lens emulation, similar to what iPhone and I think Pixel does it as well.
Jackson, I fully agree with that. I do see a pretty big difference, actually, between the iPhone shots, especially that have really great lens emulation at two different focal lengths versus the sort of generic big Gaussian blur that Samsung does. But my specific shout out to the Samsung portrait mode was the accuracy of the cutout specifically.
The edge detection.
The edge detection. Mm-hmm. And their improvement in that edge detection is incredible. They've gone from like missing a lot, where you know sometimes you like you open the viewfinder and you like start the portrait mode preview and you're like, that looks like trash. Uh-huh. If the photo looks like this, I don't even want it. It looked like that in the very beginning. To now, it's like it's handling hair blowing in the wind. It's handling both humans and like boxy objects in their hands at the same time. It's handling like the underarm cutout.
Yeah,
too.
That's always one like where if your body's creating some sort of isolated background image that it doesn't, it just assumes that's part of the subject.
Right.
The fact that it's cutting that out is
it's getting all
super
of that.
Impressive.
And so I have a couple examples in my tweet where, it's basically flawless. I mean, and this is, again, it's not flawless lens emulation and realistic large sensor simulation. No, that's not my tweet. It's just the accuracy of the portrait. I should have used the word cutout, basically.
I think
it's the most accurate cutout.
Or accurate edge detection, I think, would work perfectly.
And I don't think there's any debate there. I think it's the most accurate edge detection over the others.
Would you rather have an iPhone with slightly worse edge detection? And I mean, we're still talking pretty good, but like you said, cut out under your arm, maybe. If you're imagine wearing headphones, like the piece between your head and the headphone band. Would you rather have maybe it missing a couple of those and a really nice depth fall off, like a real camera, like a lens emulation, or would you rather have perfect edge detection and being able to control the background blur, but it's not like a lens depth of field, it's just Gaussian blur?
I would rather have perfect edge detection because it's that much better right now. And I'm just going to err on the side of turning down the blur a little bit because right now, really, the edge detection is great, and then it kind of spoils the look by being this giant, like, super blurred background as if you're at, like, f1.2, which is weird because then you would need some sort of a natural fall-off, which comes from the emulation. Mm-hmm. So turn down the blur a little bit, and it looks a little more natural, and because the edge detection is, like, a perfect cutout, I think that looks great. I just think I see in so many iPhone photos, like, especially on hair.
Yeah.
And like edges of faces and ears and stuff, there's always like a blotch that they just miss. Mm-hmm. And
it can really take you out of like,
exactly.
A photo.
Every time I see that, I'm like, ugh, crappy portrait mode again on a phone. So I would take the perfect cutout.
It's funny because right now I think I would rather take the lens emulation because it does kind of feel like it just reminds me of when I was one of the first things I was learning in Photoshop was like basically to do that is like you would cut people out and you would change the background color and it's like, oh, this is so cool. And then you look at it a year later, you're like, this looks so fake. But because of all of that, I think the edge detection is much harder to accomplish. So I think it seems like a much easier step for Samsung to add lens emulation to their perfect cutouts than it does for Google and iPhone to get better at edge detection.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. When I see that sort of level of improvement with their edge detection from Samsung, I feel like their logical next step is let's do fall off and natural bokeh better. And that's going to look awesome. And I think they can do that.
And then add Helios bokeh.
I mean, I would pay for that.
That would be
I would literally pay for that.
That feels like someone's got to be able to make an app that can do that.
Probably, but it's not going to be as good as if Samsung just builds it in. But yeah.
That would be really sick.
Please. That would be sick. Support for Waveform comes from Coda. So are you having trouble getting your remote team organized and on the same page? Or for that matter, is your own desktop looking a little chaotic with a lot of tools and tabs? If any of that sounds familiar, then you may be interested in Coda. So Coda is an all-in-one collaborative workspace designed to bring teams and tools together for a more organized workday. So Coda blends the flexibility of docs, the structure of spreadsheets, and the power of applications, and the intelligence of AI to make work well, less work. So with Coda's extensive planning capabilities, you can stay aligned by managing your planning cycles in one location while setting and measuring objectives for key results with full visibility across teams. Plus, you can access hundreds of templates and get inspired by others in Coda's gallery. So if you want a platform that empowers your team to collaborate effectively and focus on shared goals, you can get started with Coda today for free. So you can head over to coda.io/wave, that's coda.io/wave, to get started for free. So coda.io/wave. Support for this show comes from NetSuite. Let's do some quick math. So the less your business spends on operations or multiple systems, the more margin you'll have, and that equals more money in your pocket. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, I mean, everything seems to cost more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. So NetSuite is a leading cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. And so you can reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. So you can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you can improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. So head to netsuite.com/waveform. That's netsuite.com/waveform. netsuite.com/waveform. All right. Well, you want to go straight into mate?
Yeah, I really want to see this. We've been talking about this, but I keep seeing that it's on the table.
It's sitting here on the table. I took it out the box.
How many times on this podcast do you think we've said we didn't think this was a real phone?
Well, the story behind it. Should we tell the story behind it? It's kind of a fun one.
Actually, I did want to say that. It's pretty cool.
So I'll tell this in a little bit less detail in the video. So this will be a real breakdown. Is one of you emailed me and said, hey, I just saw in your video about that other folding phone that sucked that you've never seen a Huawei Mate XS, a Huawei Mate X in person. I have. I own one. And like sent me a bunch of pictures of it and like, here's the one that I use every day. This is my phone. Do you want to, like, should I ship it to you? Do you want to try one? And first of all, not going to drop their name here for privacy reasons, but thank you. Huge, like, shout out to you for being that generous.
Yeah, we really appreciate
that. That was a big first domino to fall for us going, yeah, wait a second. Other people do have this phone. Like, how have we not tried this yet? So we sort of went down a rabbit hole. We're like, maybe we can. He's out of the country, so it's some international shipping concerns. And now we're like, oh, should we insure this? It's a very expensive phone. It's his personal phone. We don't want to like lose it in the mail.
It's not a cheap personal
phone.
It's not cheap, exactly.
And it's like in these times, like mail isn't the most reliable thing. So maybe we'll look into some other ways, but huge shout out for getting the ball rolling there. Then basically we did a little bit of research and started to figure out like if we want to just buy one, it's impressively hard to get one in the US
or Canada, just North America. They don't seem to, and I can only assume, I don't know about Canada, but that must have something to do with Google Play services not being allowed
and just Huawei's relationship. So essentially we ended up trying to figure out, well, what if we I haven't even told Saf this. So we're like, what if we ship one to Super Saf?
Yeah.
And then he ships it to us and then we have one. Like, there's all these questions in our head about how to get one here. And eventually the wizards over at Dbrand were just like, yes, we can secure one.
They're the smartphone mafia. They are convinced.
They are the gadget mafia. Let's not forget they secured 12 PS5s and 12 Xbox Series X for a giveaway. No idea how they did that, by the way. And I'm not even going to ask because there's probably bloodshed. I don't know how they did that. But they managed to get a brand new inbox unopened Huawei Mate XS. By the way, there's a Mate X and a Mate XS, which is a slight spec bump revision a few months later.
I think we just looked it up on GSM Arena. The only difference is a Kirin 980 versus a 990, which essentially is just giving it 5G.
Yeah. So I'm holding the phone now. I just unboxed it. We're working on our video about it. Might even be out by the time this podcast is up, but I'm going to hand it to you for the first time. This is the phone we've been seeing so many videos about and like, this is the prototypical, like, best-looking outside folding phone.
Okay, so first, the reason I wanted to do this on the podcast is because there's a very... Every single phone we get in hand, we hold on to it, we wait to unbox it on camera, and then the minute the camera turns off, all of us crowd around the table and snag it from each other to try and...
Let me see that.
So I wanted to just do it live. We had some time this morning, and I didn't have a lot of stories for the podcast. I thought this would be fun. My first impression of this is it is so weird that I can hold it, and I can't feel the fold or the connection or the hinge or anything. It just feels like I'm holding a phone that's completely screen and has two buttons on the side.
So explain like how the
cool
fold
to me.
Yeah, that is definitely unusual for every other folding phone.
Uh-huh.
Explain the way it folds.
Okay, so it is the exact opposite of the Samsung phone, whereas the screen is on the outside and the outside of the screen is folding onto it, not onto itself, away from itself. I mean, if you took a book and if you were some punk kid in school and hated books and completely turned it inside out so the spine was cracking on top of each other,
mm-hmm.
that's what this would be like. Oh, this is the first time I saw it on. Interesting. Okay. First thing I notice is when it turns on, so you have the main screen that's on the folding part is your main screen on the front of it. So it feels very, at first, like it's going to be bezel-less, but it actually winds up having a fairly large bezel on the right side.
On one side, yeah.
And then the left side is where it just feels like a curved screen because the screen's actually curving all the way to the back, although it does shut itself off.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a waterfall screen on the left. It reminds me of the first... was that like... Was it Note 6 or was it like S6 Edge?
It was the Note something edge. Yeah, the Note Edge where one side
only one side
over.
Folded and it gave you a couple apps. That's what this feels like, except it's on the inside of my palm holding up my left hand, or the outside. The other thing I'm noticing is this a button to unlatch it?
Yep.
Okay.
So when you fold it over backwards, like a book where you're breaking the spine, and you clip it in the back, you literally like fold it flat and it clips in. And you have to like unlock it by pressing a button and it pops out like a book.
Yeah, but like, I'm folding it in. I'll see if we can get some ASMR clicking here. That sounded pretty solid, actually.
That was nice. That was nice. That was the unclick.
That was unclick. One more click. Oh, yeah. That's a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts if I've ever heard one. I thought that looked weird when you pulled it out and unboxed it. That's pretty satisfying.
Yeah.
That makes me feel like, this is clipped and it's staying in. And when I want it out, it almost folds about 90 degrees. And then it's a really simple fold out to your full screen, which looks great. This is why I'm not a reviewer, because I can't. Okay. That's a nice size screen. It's real.
Yeah, it's real. So... when I took it out the box, I had a couple thoughts right off the bat. Number one, it's thinner than I expected. It's about as thick as like a, honestly, an S21 Ultra.
What about, S21 Ultra if the camera bump was all the way through?
Yeah, the maximum thickness of the S21 Ultra is the standard thickness of this folded
phone. What about LG Wing? I think it might be thinner than
Wing. Wing is thicker than this.
Can I go get Wing?
I mean, I bet it's...
That's thinner than Wing?
I would bet this is thinner than Wing.
I kind of do too, but I'm going to get it just to make sure.
Okay.
All right. So I'm holding Wing in my hand right now, and I'm trying to think of what that just felt like. Final answer on if you think it is thicker.
I believe it's thicker. Let me see. Let me see that. I'm holding the Wing next to it.
It looks very close.
It's very close, yeah. The Wing and the Mate XS are about the same thickness.
Yeah, so. What's interesting is if anyone out there has a Wing with them, imagine the Wing thickness, no camera bump, but the...
All three of you have a Wing
and are interested in the Mate XS. The Mate XS is wider, though, as a front screen.
Yeah.
So it's still a chunky phone, but it is not unreasonable.
So I guess because I was coming from the FlexPi, which was a pretty poor... like thickness to screen ratio.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting this to be thicker, but it's not. It is thin. So I understand the awe factor a lot more. Number two, I mean, maybe this is just my reviewer side coming straight out, but I was like, oh, I can't wait for this to be 120 hertz because it's a 60 hertz screen and all the animations are 60 hertz. And I immediately think, I mean, we're allegedly going to see a successor pretty soon. I'm thinking that's going to be higher frame rate, hopefully 120 hertz. That'd be nice. And then the third thing I just think is, all right, we're going to see rollables. The advantage to rollables over this is probably just the actual aspect ratio and form factor you get. Like you said, it's a big phone when you're holding it like this, but it's a pretty normal aspect ratio.
Yeah.
You click it open, it's kind of like the Samsung Galaxy Fold. It's a square.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nice because it's bigger, but what do you get out of that bigger screen? You can watch slightly bigger videos with huge black bars. You can type on a bigger keyboard. You can probably, I'm really into this bigger form factor for emails. That's what I've loved the Fold for. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I'm getting so much done with multiple columns. But yeah, this is, it's fairly interesting.
I think like in just pure design and feel in hand and just opening it up to a big screen, I'm so pumped at how nice this feels, honestly, because I think ultimately this feels like one of the best ways to do a folding phone. I'd still worry about how delicate it is. One thing I just thought of though is, and I don't know if you have a Fold, maybe you do this, maybe you don't, but do people usually fold it up in that almost like little laptop scenario? Is that, or like if you use the, if you fold it and assume it's kind of two screens, like fold it 90 degrees almost and use the bottom as a keyboard and the top as your email thing, is that
yeah,
a
you
thing
can't.
Foldable? You can't do that with this.
Can't do that with this.
I don't know if that's things people actually do, but.
Can you watch movies like this? That's.
No, you...
not really.
Huh.
It's spring loaded. It's really spring loaded. So the.
I like the latch.
Yeah.
Is that what you call it? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd call it a latch.
I'm just waiting for it to break as you're doing it. Oh, what did the. Like the first warning.
Okay, the warnings, that is actually the first thing I noticed. So when you take it out the box, the phone is wrapped in this plastic like every other phone, but printed on that plastic is a bunch of warnings. You get past the phone, underneath it is another card with the same set of warnings printed on it again in case you just threw out the plastic too fast. And one of those warnings was do not fold and unfold this phone in anything less than -5 Celsius, which for us in the States, that's 23 degrees Fahrenheit, which it is definitely colder than that outside now. So if I'm trying to take pictures, I better not fold and unfold my phone.
Can I see something
that's
real
crazy.
Quick? Also, I wonder about this screen protector. I'm surprised they didn't learn their lesson from Samsung, but this is...
They came first, technically, but yeah.
Well, I guess XS did not though, right?
Oh, true.
They should have made... The screen protector, I can only assume you don't want to take off, but it is, there are enough lips on the top of it for someone to be like, huh, I don't really want this, and do
and
the,
pull it off. Yep.
Exactly what we did.
Which means I'm going to, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
I'm going to.
This phone is not going to make it through the review, right?
You know what? It might not.
I don't want to say let's break it, but I have a bad feeling it is going to break.
I'm definitely not going to intentionally break it, but I'm going to treat it like I'm going to use the phone every day. Obviously, it doesn't have the best software experience to actually use it every day, but the point was I made this point in our last video about the FlexPi, which is we should probably stop doing the folding on the outside thing. This is like not the best way to protect this fragile new tech. We can come back to it when the folds and the creases are better, but not great, right? I'm not expecting to have my mind changed about that fundamental thing, but I think I will still, at the same time, be really impressed with the tech. I think both things can be true.
Yeah, I'm just realizing selfie mode, you have to use the screen folded on the back. There's no camera on the front.
Right.
So you have to physically turn.
So you take selfies with the main camera and then use the screen on the back. Which is like a pro and a con.
And then when you want to look at the picture, you have to flip it back around. Huh. That's a cool first impression.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's real. This is, yeah.
I'm into it. All right. Well, now that we've established that it's real, and you guys should check out the video if it's up yet, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we'll do some Q&A. We haven't done that in a minute, so let's talk.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it hits the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Support for Waveform comes from 1Password. So it's hard to come up with a totally unique password every time you need one, but it's what you gotta do to stay secure. Luckily, a password manager makes creating and tracking your passwords completely painless. So 1Password combines industry-leading security with award-winning design to bring its users private, secure, and user-friendly password management. And it does that by generating as many strong, unique passwords as you need, and then securely storing them in an encrypted vault that only you have access to. With 1Password, you just need to remember one strong account password, and it'll protect everything else from your logins, your credit cards, notes, office Wi-Fi, etc. You no longer need to keep a bunch of sticky notes all over your desk or reuse the same password over and over again. I've tried out 1Password. As you know, I switch between devices and phones constantly, and so using 1Password to just fill out things quickly and log into a whole bunch of stuff makes switching between devices a lot easier, so I'm all good to go once I sign in. So right now, our listeners can get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/waveform. That's the number 1Password.com/waveform for 2 free weeks. So 1Password.com/waveform.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, welcome back. We're doing Q&A. We haven't done a Q&A in a little while, but that's been part of the fun of the podcast, is talking to you guys. And so we asked on Twitter what you wanted to know. I think this is the first one of 2021, technically. So
yeah, I think it is.
Of the new year. Welcome back. A lot of good questions, so we'll just dive right in. I have one right here at the top from Ben Sullins. His question is, now that we know the Plaid Plus Model S specs, what do you think the 2022 Roadster will be like?
That's the train's big old... Is it? I think it's saying that because it doesn't believe it'll come out in 2022.
Yeah. I guess the first question is it coming out in 2022? Who knows? I don't know.
I bet no.
I don't want to bet on that car anymore. So I kind of think it's still going to be in line with what they initially predicted, just late. So they were saying some of those stats would be 0-60 in 1.9 seconds for the base model. I still think they will achieve that on like the stickiest tires. 250 plus mile an hour top speed, I think, is still achievable. I'm just not sure if they need further, like, maybe gearing or anything like that. I think they'll just continue working on those motors.
Mm-hmm.
And then 620 mile range is the big one. And I think when we get to those new, I guess it's 4680 battery cells for Plaid Model S, if Plaid Plus Model S does achieve 520 miles, then I think it's very possible for the smaller, lighter Roadster to achieve 600.
Yeah, so it pretty much, what you're saying, it sounds like, is Roadster is going to be Plaid Plus with a different, lighter body that will increase a couple specs from it, but not, honestly, not too much different.
Yeah, I think it will be what they've projected, just late, which is fine. Yeah. Tesla has a habit of doing that. Tesla has a habit of projecting amazing things. Full self-driving is ready. All this stuff is going to be great. Our specs are going to have this much. And they never do it on time, but I'll give them credit. They always get to do it eventually. So I think it will be all the specs initially projected, just late.
I should sell a t-shirt that says that. We always do it eventually.
Yeah.
Elon would probably wear that, or at least on a pair of short shorts, probably.
Oh, I have a quick one. Someone just asked, how do you feel about the S21 going back to full HD?
I was just reading that one.
Does it make things like watching Netflix a worse experience, or is it only noticeable when comparing to another phone? Here's what I'll say. I don't think it's noticeable 99% of the time. It is nice to have the option of watching 1440p videos, and sometimes if you stumble across a good video, you will notice. But if you've never had a 1440p phone, this is one of the best 1080p screens ever in any phone. No problem with it.
Also, I think the whole illusion of like these worse phones is played out way more in the comments section than it is from the actual tech reviewers. Especially, remember the XR? Everyone was so mad at how bad the screen was based purely on specs. But like John Morrison did a video where he blind tested people and a lot of them picked the lower resolution phone. You can have a great looking screen at a lower resolution and it still is going to perform very, very well. Yeah. I've looked at S21 phone. If you didn't tell me that, I probably wouldn't have even noticed. Like most people, if they didn't see that physical number, probably wouldn't really be able to tell the difference, especially because it's a smaller phone too. Like
it's 440 pixels per inch.
That's less than the XR, right? Wasn't that like 480?
iPhone XR was 326 pixels per inch.
Okay.
But I think the sticking point was it was pretty big and it was only 720p roughly. So people got kind of mad about that. But hey, here we are. I think it's a great looking screen.
It's a great looking screen. Go into your Verizon or Walmart or something and take a look at it. You probably think it's going to look great. Just like I think the XR looked great. Here's an interesting one. And maybe I'm partially picking it because of the second part of the question. What do you think about all these smart things and wearables and all these apps with permissions and making our lives more connected, but at the expense of losing privacy and individuality on a larger scale? And then he asks, who's my favorite Valorant agent? So let's go to the first one first.
Okay.
I think privacy is like something we don't talk about that much, but I think that's also because there's so much behind it. And it's always something, at least in my mind, like it's there. I think about it, but at the end of the day, I mostly just know the way these companies are making money is by selling me ads. And if I can, and it works, the amount of stuff I buy that I don't need, it targets it very, very well. So I guess I'm not that worried that they're listening to my dinner conversation about where I'm going. I mean, maybe. I don't know. Like, I don't think there's that much of my personal life that Google gives a damn about, except for what my wallet's spending money on. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm naive in thinking that, but for the most part, I don't get all that worried. I connect everything to everything. I don't really mind it that much.
I don't think you're alone. I think it's a pretty clear one-to-one inverse relationship between functionality, convenience versus privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we don't talk about it enough, but I feel like it's pretty well understood at this point that your smart tech has to know a lot about you to be smart. It's why the company that has the best privacy policy and honestly knows the least about you has the worst assistant in Siri. I mean, Bixby's pretty bad too, but at least it does a lot of device stuff. I think
I've never put that together.
Yeah, Google's assistant's really good for a reason. So. I think the bottom line is, we probably could talk about it more. It's not the sexiest topic to talk about, obviously, but it does have a lot of implications for the future. And I think the basic understanding of that inverse relationship is important.
Yeah. Also, favorite Valorant agent right now is Ray's. Favorite team is probably 100 Thieves, but EG's new team looks good. And one of the reasons I really like that, two of the players, Alexander and Temperature, I really like, but I also really like that right now there's a professional team that has men and women on the team together. I think we don't see that in esports that much. I don't know why, but I think it should happen more, and I'm really excited to root for a team with mixed genders in it.
Nice.
Huh. I like this question. What pointers would you give out to parents when buying their 13-year-old their first smartphone? First of all, I want to rephrase this question a little bit. Like, if they ask for a Snapdragon 888, do they really need it? Let's not do just 13-year-old. Let's just say, like, in general, if you are a parent buying your kid tech, number one, you rule, if you're even thinking about that, because tech is expensive, and if they're passionate about it, that means you're looking at something they're passionate about and getting it for them, which is awesome. But this is a hard question to give advice for.
It is. I don't think you need a Snapdragon 888, no.
No.
I'll just say that. I think it's pretty safe. Yeah, so a smartphone is one where it's like you've decided that, okay, they're at the right age where they need a smartphone. It's appropriate to get them one. They will be using this phone to be connected to the world in a way they've never been before. That involves possibly gaming experiences, possibly social media, possibly just emailing, whatever that is, maybe just texting their parents and family members. I think there's a lot of really great phones in a sweet spot of like well under $600 that do that really well. Mm-hmm. The question is like, kids watch reviews of $1,000 phones and they're like, I want that. I want that S21 Ultra so I can take 100x shots of, I don't know what they're taking pictures of, but you know, I want that amazing gaming experience and I want the fastest processor. Really, really, that's just going to be about future-proofing. And one of my rules for like making an important tech purchase decision is if you spend a little more now, you won't have to replace it as quickly later. Mm-hmm. And whether you do, you know, high-end stuff on the device or not, it does benefit you in that way. So instead of buying a new phone next year because you bought a phone that gets old fast, you buy it every 2 to 3 years because you got a little nicer phone that has future-proofing.
I think there's another angle to that in is how, not how much do you trust your kid, but how well do they handle expensive things? Because maybe you shouldn't future-proof something if you think there's a good chance they lose or break that phone in the first year. Then maybe go down. I think my general advice on, and this doesn't have to just come to tech, it just seems to happen with tech, is if you're buying something for somebody who that is like a big hobby of theirs, if your kid is watching a lot of tech videos and they really want a phone and they're asking for a Snapdragon 888, it probably means they're passionate about it. I think if you get them whatever, but make sure that it's a decision that you took the time to research and you can explain to them the reason as to why you made that purchase option, they should, I would hope at least, appreciate how much effort you put into doing the research and going that. And then you guys can have a discussion over why you decided not to go with a Snapdragon 88. Hopefully it's not just because we told you on Waveform not to do it. Hopefully there's a real like, hey, the 765G is pretty good for this price. And you know, this is your first smartphone. Let's see how well you handle it. Yeah. Then we'll look at the 888.
Did you ever make a PowerPoint for why you should get something as a kid?
I did not. I definitely made up like weird thing reasons in my head as to why I deserved it. I'm sure my parents laughed at me, but not PowerPoint. But I feel like you've kind of told this story before.
I have. There, almost everything I've ever used on the channel, I've bought myself. But one very early thing that I didn't buy, I got as a gift. The whole year, I'd gotten a Canon T2i and I had a kit lens and I loved everything about this thing, but I wanted a prime and I wanted a fast lens. And there was this nifty 50, $98. I was like, you know what? It's almost Christmas. I think I might be able to get this lens for Christmas. I think I can pull this off. And I had this whole bullet point list of like why this lens was great. F1.8, mom. This is the, I'm never going to get another F1.8 lens. This is a big deal. This lens was like, you know, it was fast autofocus. There's all these great things about why I wanted it. Presented all this stuff. I got a nice polite nod about, oh, that's nice. And then I got it from Santa Claus for Christmas. That's so awesome. That was the greatest day of my life. Everything else I've ever gotten for the channel, I've put all of my hard work, blood, sweat, and tears into, but that lens, I did the PowerPoint work for that one.
Yeah.
That was worth it.
I think this is also hard advice for us to give because neither of us have kids that we have to buy stuff for. Yeah. I'm sure it's very much relevant to your context matters, but yeah, I don't think you need to get them an SD88. Don't tell them we told you that. And good luck.
All right, Sean just says 2021 Frankenstein phone ? I think it's been a minute since I actually tweeted or like shared like all my favorite pieces. You know how I'll go like, oh, screen from this phone, battery from this phone. Let's do that.
It's been a long year, so maybe we did it in 2020.
Yeah,
but we're gonna do it again.
So okay,
are we including the S21 lineup?
Yeah, whatever you want. All everything right. That's like already out. So if I start with screen, I'm going to go S21 Ultra display. I want that 120 hertz, of course, but it's variable refresh rate. It's 1440p. It goes up to 120 hertz. It's pretty great.
It's curved.
It's curved a tiny bit over the edges. Okay. I'm okay with the level of curve now. So I'm starting with that screen. then, but you know what? I would shrink it a little bit. I'd chop off a little bit because it's a huge phone, and I think a lot of people don't realize how big that phone is. Give me that screen, but at like a 6.3-inch clip.
6.3, so that's closer to like regular S21?
Exactly.
Okay, so you just want the bigger screen in the S21, but I'm assuming, do you want the same cameras or do you want a different set of cameras?
I'm gonna go with a different set of cameras.
Okay.
So this is where it gets kind of complicated because I end up pulling from different phones for different cameras.
Do it, get this. So, no one said this has to be a neat Frankenstein.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be possible at all either. Give me the Pixel 5's main camera, the S21 Ultra's zoom cameras, and the iPhone's video cameras.
See, but that's the weird thing is they're this. Some of those are the same, right?
Yeah.
The video cameras. What if it was like just the video processing?
Basically, yeah. I think
the iPhone.
Yeah, a previous version of this, I was like, give me the Pixel's cameras, but with iPhone's video processing.
Or what if it were iPhone's cameras, but with Google's photo processing?
That could work too.
Right? I think that would be pretty solid.
Yeah, the reason I don't want to lean too hard on that camera because it's so old at this point. Like that old hardware, the Pixel's main camera.
Yeah, that's why
I really like their image processing, and I think it makes up for barely that old chip.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put all of Samsung's cameras hardware wise and Pixel's image processing, I would probably take that.
That would be amazing.
That would be amazing. So I would go with that. While we're at it, I'm just gonna go Google Play Edition on the software. I don't think there's any question. That's still my favorite flavor of Android at this point. I'm not going to go iPhone with it. I still like to customize stuff. Battery, honestly, there's a bunch of options that could work here.
Whatever's the biggest.
Yeah, I guess like 5,000. I mean, honestly, the battery here, but there's also the fast charging part and wireless charging and all the other experiences. I might just end up building a Google Play Edition S21 Ultra, to be honest, the way I'm looking at the list.
In an S21 form factor?
In a smaller S20, yeah, exactly. That might be it.
That camera module would be like the size of the phone.
It would be half the phone, but that's my priorities. I think that's where I land.
Give me that
battery, fast charging, IP68, all that stuff. Just give me the Google software experience that I know and love. Give me the image processing from the Pixel, and not too crazy of a Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's not, I was hoping for a little more.
What would you do with yours?
I have no idea. I was going to try and make some really bad joke of like the Mate X screen with also the flip form factor, and but that just got real not funny.
I want an LG Wing with the battery of a BlackBerry Bold.
I want the LG Wing, but it can rotate 360 degrees and also be a fidget spinner. I kind of like your thought process of like better image process. I mean, because if you do Google image processing on better hardware like Samsung's, you could potentially get the edge detection with the lens emulation fall off.
Yeah. Yeah. See?
Phone of the year.
It's
been decided already.
They should have done it.
Yeah, they really need to license that. Or is it just because is it so good because they've been using the exact same camera hardware for so long?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be that.
Yeah.
Man, this podcast really makes me realize very obvious things that I've never noticed, but when I say it out loud, it's like, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Huh. Fun. I'm not even going to do a Frankenstein. Honestly, I kind of think that S21's a great phone.
It is a great phone.
A lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just everything I would do. Maybe a larger battery so I just don't have to charge for a whole weekend. But yeah, other than that, great phone.
Okay, I have a fun one. I haven't talked about this much yet, but Tim says, when do we think we're going to see true over-the-air charging, like the Xiaomi Mi Air concept, go fully mainstream? Let me just explain what he's talking about for those who haven't seen it. So Xiaomi, big smartphone manufacturer, put out a video that they're officially working on this truly, truly wireless charging, where your phone can be anywhere in a room, as long as this small, mini-fridge-sized device is sitting somewhere near the middle of the room. And it will beam a millimeter wave, like, energy stream, basically particles directly at your phone. It will track your phone around the room and it will always keep it charged. So you can have your phone in your pocket, on your desk. You can be using it. You can leave the room, leave the phone in there, come back. It will always be beaming battery at your phone. Cool. Now, love the concept. If you read the fine print, they're saying this is aimed to work at 5 watts.
Okay.
Which is the first, I mean, it's not a red flag, but obviously it's super difficult to make this tech work, and 5 watts is going to feel really slow on a big battery.
Mm-hmm.
That's, for context, the old slow bricks that are included with the iPhone were 5 watts. So not super fast, not extremely efficient, but I think we just love the idea of not having to ever worry about battery life. I think that's the real thing we're into here.
Okay. I'll talk about what you just said first, but I'm very excited to talk about this for a bunch of random reasons.
Okay.
5 watt, I think it is okay to go down in charging speed the more convenient the charging becomes. So in general, fastest speeds are generally through a plug, second fastest speeds are through wireless charging, and then now wireless charging mm-hmm. will be the slowest. Like, I don't care if my wireless charger is only charging at 10 watts
because
I'm probably mostly just tossing it on overnight. I can use it so often that I don't need it to be like a warp charge where I'm just like plugging it in and being like, come on, I got 15 minutes to get as much battery in here as possible.
Right.
I do see it being a problem if you are somebody who's just laser focused on your phone for 10 hours in the room and you're probably chewing battery faster than 5 watts might be putting it in. I mean, TikTok binge or something like that, that could be a problem. But that seems so minute that, like, if a phone is in a room, it's charging, who cares if it's 5 watts? It's just going to always be charging. That
right.
sounds awesome. This whole technology, though, is kind of wild. I wasn't expecting it, but we did have this, like, really interesting moment when this company called Figures claimed that they had invented this phone, like, or this wireless charging technology, like, 2 years ago. And we tried so hard to get it from them, and I think they wiped their website of any mentions of it.
That never existed,
that
for
was
sure.
Hilarious. And then my other thing is, if this comes out, the amount of conspiracy videos, if we see what people are talking about with 5G, I cannot imagine the stories people are going to create.
That's definitely true. What we really do know about this tech right now is it's millimeter wave. It's Wi-Fi. It's going to work fundamentally the same way as, like, if I was airdropping you something across the room.
Okay.
There's already millimeter wave tech out there. It's just like people, and it's also a millimeter wide band of it going straight to your phone. So, yeah, the question is just how comfortable are people going to be with this, like, mystery tech? They don't know how it works yet. But yeah, I don't know. The question to get back to your tweet is, when will this be mainstream? It's going to be a very long, I'm talking like years and years and years before this is anywhere near considered possibly mm-hmm. going mainstream. I love the idea of it being mainstream because then you don't need 5,000 milliamp hour batteries in phones. You need 100 milliamp hour batteries, and you have one of these in your car and in your workplace, in the screen above your, you know, the rafters above your desk at work. Like, it's just always charging mm-hmm. everywhere you go.
I guess it'll be interesting how many devices can it do at a time. I'm assuming it can do essentially unlimited. Can you put it in a Starbucks and everyone's phone's charging in Starbucks when you hop in? But yeah, so to get an attempt at a timetable here, what do you think will be mainstream first? Wireless charging or 8K televisions in people's houses?
8K televisions in people's houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'd agree with that. But that just shows you how far away we are
exactly.
from that.
I think 8K TVs in people's houses is like at least
10,
7, 8, 9 years away at the beginning of the wave. So
I would say the fact that I just upgraded my in-laws' TV to 4K means I think we're officially at the 4K as being pretty commonplace in a household.
That's a good level.
And it was like $300 for 50-inch Samsung 4K TV. I can't believe how much TVs have gone down. Last question. As a professional Ultimate Frisbee player, how good are you at Can Jam?
I'm better than average.
Okay.
But against other Ultimate players, I'm average.
Okay. First of all, Can Jam, if you're not sure, is a backyard game with a frisbee and two almost trash cans with a slot in it. And you each have a team. You stand opposite of each other. You try and get the disc inside the can by jamming it, mm-hmm. which is like you throw the disc, you try and get it over it, and your partner tries to slap it in. It's a really simple backyard game, but I also am a frisbee player. I don't think people realize when we play, we're playing against Ultimate players. So it's hard to judge what our level is at.
I played a lot in college, and we played a lot at High Tide, which was the spring break tournament. And my partner and I went, Jason might call me out for this, but I think we went undefeated.
Yeah.
I think we went undefeated against everyone else on the team.
Okay.
So me and Jason are pretty good,
but that's
against our team. So that's our measuring stick. Mm-hmm. I don't know about other, you know, ultimate club players.
It's funny because I have gone to like a barbecue or two that has Can Gym but aren't Frisbee players.
Right.
And everyone gets discouraged very quickly when the two ultimate players are playing against people who
team up,
and
yep,
you just go down pretty quick. Games
you have to break up that team. You ultimate player play with mom. Some other ultimate player plays mm-hmm. with somebody else. Then you're playing against each other. It's a little more fun.
Yeah, don't be that person that ruins a backyard game just because you take it too seriously.
Exactly.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
We'll end it there.
That was fun. All right. Well, we'll do Q&As more often. I think I think the plan is leave a little more time for Q&As. We're recording this a few hours after we asked your questions, but mm-hmm. we'll leave a little more time to come up with like maybe a topic for Q&As.
Yeah.
Where we only talk about one thing and then we can get really focused. And well, that's where we get into the weeds and we have the most fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, hope you enjoyed this chat about S21, Mate XS, and all the rest of the stuff we chatted about in the Q&A section. Thanks for listening. Catch you guys in the next one.
Waveform is brought to you in part with Studio 71, and our intro outro music was created by Cameron Barlow.